Welcome to this World of Horror End of Year Fave Watches for 2022 podcast episode 95. I'm Mom.
And I'm Mac.
And I'm Quinn.
This is the podcast where we recount the watches that we most enjoyed or didn't this year. Wahas! This week, we thought it might be fun to look back at our Fave 6 watches of 2022. This isn't a traditional ranking of the movies and TV shows from last year's show. We just want to share those shows and movies that we most enjoyed watching. Let's move on to our first segment, Mom and Mac and Quinn Chat. Hey, Mac. Hey, Quinn. How's it going?
Good. How are y'all?
Good. Good. How are you?
Good. I had a nice week last week. My boss let me go early on Friday because we had kind of a long week. Like at round two, she was like, you always get here really early. Well, get online really early. You can go home. I was like, oh, I never know what to say. I'm always like, thanks. Bye. So that was nice. And let's see. Right now, Branwyn is laying in the sun. So, I mean, what more could I ask for? That's my view.
That's a good view. I don't know what else you can ask for. I think you've got a maid today.
Yeah, I think so too.
There's this trend on TikTok and Instagram. It's like, show us your favorite view from 2022. And I was just waiting for someone to just like show their pet.
Yeah.
It happened.
I think, I mean, if you look at my camera roll, that's it. It's just her.
Yeah, mine too. It's just like Rosie and different angles of Rosie and then old memories of Rosie and Harvey. And yeah.
I really like the pictures that you take of Rosie, though. I don't know what it is about your pictures, Quinn, but they are composed very nicely.
Thank you.
I feel like dogs have such a sweet energy and you capture that energy in your dogs.
That makes me so happy. That's such a sweet thing to say.
You look at the pic and you're like, I know that's a good dog.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, Quinn and I go back to school on Monday. So I sent emails this morning to my 6 sections and I have a lot of students.
Wow.
Like, all my online classes are full and waitlisted. That's normal because it's ethics. So that's normal. But my face-to-face classes are also like in the 20s.
Damn.
I'm a little nervous because I've gotten used to teaching smaller groups, but hopefully a bunch of them will drop and
probably.
I don't know.
not because of you, but I feel like every class I took, like 2 weeks later, you're like, where did everybody go?
Yeah, that absolutely happens. I am in a very weird boat, and that is a boat that has no face-to-face classes all of a sudden.
Whoa.
Yeah, my schedule just changed yesterday because I had a class that was low enrolled, and that was my face-to-face class. So they killed it and made it into something new, like a mini online. So we'll see how that goes. But I had an overload last semester. I had some like freedom this semester.
Nice.
And I wanted it to work out this way with that face-to-face, but I don't have it. I've never had just online classes. I mean, it's not something that anyone, I think, at our school is supposed to have. I think it's just one of those things that, like, happen every once in a while because of weird circumstances, but I don't know. They say I have a face for online classes, so.
That's not what they say.
No one's ever said that.
I know, I was actually, like, developing a resentment about you, Quinn, because you're so pretty, and it's like, everyone I know who knows you and me is always likes to point out how pretty you are to me, and I'm like, thanks, I'm aware.
Oh my god.
It's like they're saying, you know, for such an ugly person, you're such a beautiful friend. How did that work out?
That's the demon in your brain talking. They're not saying that.
Also, that's just like the nicest thing to tell me about, because it's like painful for you. That made it painful. That's not reality. but you chose to like go and fight that demon in order to tell me, and it's like it means a real lot to me.
Yeah. But just full disclosure, you know, a lot of the time I'm just really mad at you. So if it's like, if you ever, like, I don't know if you ever like feel like, did I do something? Like, this person seems like randomly angry. I am.
Yeah.
I'm just like, you know, now you know why.
Okay. Yeah. I feel that a lot, actually. Not enough for me. I'm just like randomly, oh, no, that's my brain tricking me, though. I'm like, I have to, like, I'm on the people pleaser boat of like things that are wrong with me. That's one of them. So often I'm like, they're mad at me. It's probably because I said this thing to them in 2008.
You're same. This thing that I've never forgotten that they forgot 3 seconds after I said it.
Exactly.
Also, Quinn, you're in a lot of boats.
I know. I am in a lot of boats today. I just want to be on land, honestly.
Oh.
Yeah, I actually spent last week home because I have a cold. And I'm in the cold boat too.
Get out of these boats.
Yeah, get on land, dude.
Okay, I will.
And into a doctor's office.
I might think about that next week if I'm still in this boat.
You'll get scurvy.
Oh, I know. I brought oranges on the boat, so thankfully I'll be okay.
Also, just for the record, everybody on this call is so beautiful.
Oh, yeah, I know.
I agree.
I'm just kidding. Yeah.
No, but I mean, like, the most beautiful. Anybody not on this call? Sorry.
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 Last year, we did a show where we just got together to talk about our favorite watches from 2021. So I thought it might be kind of fun if we did that again, except for 2022. So there really aren't any limitations on this. It could be TV, movie. It doesn't have to have come out in 2022. A couple of mine did, but that's not a requirement. And so who would like to go first?
I'll go first.
Okay.
Okay, so I watched a lot of bad movies in 2022, so it actually took a second to find these. I kept scrolling and I was like, nope, not that one. But starting this list off, I'm saving the best for last. First, I'm going to start with Downrange, which came out in 2017. This is a movie by Ryuhei Kitamura, who also did The Midnight Meat Train. So this is about just a group of friends whose tire blows out, but then it turns out that they're just on an abandoned road, but then it turns out there's a sniper there who blew out the tire and is trying to pick them off one by one. And this got like really poor reviews, and it's probably because the budget was horrible and the acting was bad. But here was the thing, is that I saw exactly what this man was going for, and if I just put myself in the mindset of exactly how I think he wanted it to look like, it was a very scary movie. Like, there's a part where there's a wolf and he causes another car accident. It's so good. It's got 2.7 out of 5 stars on Letterboxd, but I think it's great.
And I watched this one too, and I think that one of the things that he really likes to do is sort of do these shots from the point of view of inanimate objects. Mm-hmm. So I think there's like a point of view of like a tire that comes off. So the camera's just sort of going in the circular pattern. And yeah. I mean, there's a lot of this that happens on Midnight Meat Train, which is that Clive Barker, Bradley Cooper joint.
Do you like that one?
Yeah, I liked it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen either of them, but I did want to say that your review of that movie is just so quintessentially Mac. Like, I know what he was trying to do, and he didn't get quite there, but I could see exactly what he's trying to do, and if he had done it, it'd be amazing, you know? And it's among your top six of the year. And I just think that's like, I love that review. I think you're so cool.
Thank you. Yeah, I've felt that so passionately, just particularly about this movie, because I also understood why people would rate it poorly, because I was like, it's not good. It's a good first draft, and I want to see the finished one so bad. And also, guns are like, have always been something I'm so afraid of. It's like the scariest thing that exists in our world to me. So,
Matt, did you see No One Lives?
Yes.
Okay, that's also...
Oh.
That's also Kitamura. I think I went down a little Kitamura trail.
the old Kitamura trail.
Yeah.
Just, so...
Because he's very inventive, and I like that. I'm a visual person, so...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He's fun. Quinn, what about you? Give us one of your fave sixes.
Okay, so I guess... I will start with Jimmy Chin and Elizabeth Chai's The Rescue. It's a 2022 documentary. I saw it, or I'm sorry, 2021 documentary. And I saw it this year, and it is concerning the 2018 rescue of the Thailand soccer players in the cave. So since this film, there's been a feature-length film, a narrative film, and then I think a series on it as well. But this was the first film to touch on it, and I think that they did it in such a unique way. I don't have either of you seen this one yet?
No.
I haven't seen it yet.
Okay. So these are the people that did let me just make sure I'm getting this right. Oh yeah, Free Solo. That was the film that won Best Doc a few years ago, and then they did Meru. So they do these like pretty adventurous documentaries, like climbing, things like that. So this is a little bit of a different path, but they did this in a very cool way that made me think so much about the definition of documentary and what it should entail and what it is. Because so much of the film is made up of reenactments, but the reenactments, they trick you to think that you're actually seeing all of these things unfold. Once you get to the end, you're like, they're clearly reenactments and you understand that. And then part of me was angry at first, but then another part of me was like, give it another shot, watch it again. So I kept watching it, and it's very uplifting, by the way. It's like, it's a beautiful story of how sort of the world came together to help these kids who were stuck in this cave and then found these sort of heroes in these average everyday folks that just had this like were able to be cave divers. This was their hobby. But, you know, regular people, even rescue people, they couldn't do this type of thing. So it had to be these specialist hobby divers that saved these kids. And I love that about it. And as I watched, you know, more and more, I got to really like the idea of this kind of new layer definition of documentary incorporating reenactments, because that used to be a no-no documentary film, and it's becoming more and more accepted. But the whole film is kind of based on this idea that you will go with them and you know, buy into this. And the way that they do it, I think, makes you buy into it and then maybe have a little bit of looking back and thinking, did they like pull the rug from underneath me? But I don't think that they did. So anyways, long story short, I love this film because the story is amazing and beautiful. And it's like everything that you want to see. It's uplifting. It's heroic. It's like in the worst of times, humanity can be the very best, you know, but then it's also done in a pretty unique and technical way that I think just makes a viewer kind of take a step back and reevaluate what they think of documentary in general. So that's my first pick.
I hadn't even heard of it. So
yeah,
that's a great recommendation.
Right now. So it's very good. Mm-hmm. It's worth your time. It's just beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Did you teach it, Quinn?
yeah, actually, I did teach it in the spring, and the last, I had so many problems with my film class in the spring because of the room. And so the last 10 minutes, the power just cut out in that room completely.
No.
We had to like race to find another room to finish it. So everybody was just like, and then I just like kind of took the wind out of their sails when we had to change rooms. But people really loved it. And, you know, there's so much spirituality as well in this film. So I don't know. There's something that I think I don't usually show films like this. This one kind of does a lot, and it really fills in the holes of places that I don't touch in my class. And I loved the reliance on the spirituality too, because students like to talk about that a lot, and I would like to give them a chance to do that, but you know, so this was a good way.
My first one is one of the last movies that I saw last year. It's Glass Onion: A Knives Out Mystery. And as you both know, the first Knives Out movie is sort of comfort food for me, because I don't know how many times I watched it. Sometimes I would just like put it on and it would just like run in the background. There are just so many things I love about it. I think the script for the original movie is better than this one, but I love it that Rian Johnson is doing this project where he's sort of reviving these, you know, ensemble casts of amazing actors in this kind of old style, you know, mystery.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up on those, and so it's really nice to see somebody who loves that genre as much as me and who is so talented doing these kind of movies. So I guess the next two, or maybe the next one at least, has been contracted. Netflix has already, I don't know, whatever, commissioned the next one. Johnson has said he'll keep doing them as long as Daniel Craig will appear in them. And Daniel Craig said he'll appear in them so long as Rian Johnson keeps writing them. So it's also a lot of fun because Nathan Johnson, Ryan's brother, is the composer. And Rian Johnson tends to use the same people over and over. One thing I learned about in the trivia is that Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who he's used like in every film, is actually the voice of the hourly dong.
No! That's so cool!
Which also reminds me that Cate Blanchett is the voice of like the spider or some like crazy, crazy character in Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio. Like, she has no lines. She just like makes these sounds. So I just love those kind of things that people do, you know, when they have this much power and creativity going on. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot slicker than the first one. It takes place on a Greek island versus like this mansion. And I prefer the cast of the first one better, but this one, some people did, including Quinn's dad, I guess, got a guess the twist, and I didn't. Mm. So I think it's a pretty well-made mystery, because I'm one of those people that's always looking for the twist. It didn't occur to me. And it is the kind of film, I will say, that it rewards a second viewing. Maybe that's all you need. There is a twist, and once you know the twist, you can go back and watch it again, and you'll have a different experience. With the first one, it's just one of those things that I just fell in love with, just the script and the voices, so I didn't even have to like watch it necessarily. Whereas this one is a lot more, it's just a different flavor. But I think you probably do need to watch it twice, which I think Johnson was sort of banking on. I saw it twice in the same week in the theater, once by myself and the second time with my boyfriend, and it was a lot of fun both times.
I still gotta watch it. Everybody I know, like literally everybody I know, has been like, watch this movie.
I thought it was so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
You see, I didn't look at this, but I saw some people posting on social media about the comparisons to real people, like Edward Norton to Elon Musk. And then I don't think I went any further with it, but did you?
Yeah, Ryan Johnson wrote it way before Musk took over Twitter. And he said that he plays a tech billionaire, but he's not based on one particular person. He's just, you know, a tech billionaire type.
Yeah.
There's a lot of those.
Yeah. Yeah, I did not guess the twist, but I don't get the twist. It doesn't appear to me unless it's very obvious, you know, and I don't try to. So, but yeah, my dad, I was like, no.
There are, I mean, I'm sure it's my algorithm. I keep getting like news stories about Glass Onion, but the cameos are a lot of fun too. And you might not even get them the first time that you watch the movie. And some of them are just like seemingly from left field, but Johnson is the kind of person who likes a puzzle. So I'm sure everything fits together in a very intricate way. And one thing that I learned that I guess I'll spoil is that Stephen Sondheim got Angela Lansbury to appear in the movie because they were old friends from, you know, what's the name of it?
Barbara. Sweeney Todd.
Sweeney Todd, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I loved seeing her for that. I loved that little clip of them on Zoom. Like the most hilarious collection of folks. I don't know. Loved that part, though. It was good to see her.
Super fun. So, Mac, what's another pick?
Surprising to you both, I'm sure, that my second pick is Yo-Kai Monsters 100 Monsters.
No way.
It was directed by Kimiyoshi Yasuda and came out in 1968. Honestly, this is more about the experience, which is related to the podcast of watching this, but this movie was just, it led me down such a long rabbit hole about like Japanese mythology and yokai and whatnot. And then, like, I don't know. Also, I haven't watched a lot of older movies, and I think I just categorize them usually as like, well, they look worse than movies now. So then when I see movies like this and the special effects, obviously they're like, not technically on the same level as ones now, but they're way more enjoyable. Like all the special effects in this movie, even though I knew that they were green screens, so much better than, sorry to diss, but like all of Marvel. I really think like the constriction of what you can do leads to so much more creativity. And this movie is so creative, and that is way more fun than, I don't know, some lifeless CGI, in my opinion. And yeah, like there's 2D animation in this. There's prosthetics, or not prosthetics. Prosthetics and practical effects and green screens and whatnot. And I also just think the story's really fun. And yeah, and anybody who's maybe interested in looking up yokai, I recommend it. Because if you then watch a lot of Japanese media, you see like the echoes of that you wouldn't know normally. Like I've watched anime basically like my whole life, and there's just a lot of themes you see, and sometimes you pick up on it and you're like, I wonder what that is. And then you just learn like, oh yeah, that's just from this story that everybody knows in this culture. And that stuff is so interesting. Like spirits are depicted more as like flames, and more so than how, you know, it's usually like a sheet ghoul, you know, in American, like, children's things, you know. That's just cool.
That is really cool. And this was your call for genre pick. And it was one of our lengthiest titled genre picks, something like old-timey practical effects. Yeah. I don't know, but when we paired it with The Creeping Flesh, which was an old movie from the 1970s, and we went down a Peter Cushing hole. That doesn't sound right. But no, this was great. And this is one of the reasons why I love doing the podcast with you, Mac. And you too, Quinn, is you bring me movies that I never would have looked at myself. And then we get to watch them and talk about them. And it's great.
Yeah.
My second pick is Martin McDonagh's The Banshees of Inisherin, a 2022 film. And this one I saw in the theaters probably in October. And this one was one that I wasn't sure was going to make my list. And I don't even know if it would make it if we did this tomorrow. So, but because we're doing it today, it made my list. For me, this one made my list because I think that it was beautifully filmed, beautifully acted. I love sort of the layers of lore within this film. And I like the kind of unique perspective on friendship and how to live your life and what is good and what is bad. And I don't know. For me, this one is one that I will not be watching over and over again because it was really intense. And it sort of took my breath away in moments. And when I left, I don't think I fully understood the film because there's a lot of things that I think are quite intense. And there are some things in this film that are on my no-no list of things. Like, I never want to see these things happen in a film. And then they happened in this one. But when I look back fully and, you know, objectively, I want to put it on my list. I loved In Bruges, and I know this is not a sequel to In Bruges in any way, but I kind of love the idea of looking at it as that because of, you know, these two actors that we have in both and how, I don't know, the transformative nature of, like, the years in between these two films. But I love Jenny the donkey in this film. You know, I love what they do with the war that's going on in the background while they're in this, like, sort of remote island town. And I don't know, I'm talking about this movie assuming as though everyone has seen it, and I know that's not the case, but I'm not pulling in a plot summary here. But if you have not seen it, I think that it is worth a watch. I do feel like you might have to be in a certain mood for it, however, and I do think it's kind of intense in certain ways. But at its base, it's a story about I don't know. I think like middle age and friendship and priorities and. There's a lot of philosophy in here, and I don't know. I don't know. It made my list today. I tell you, I don't know if it would make my list tomorrow, but it made my list today for sure. Now, I have a couple on my list that I'm going to axe by the time we're done with this. And this one, it's not getting axed today. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw it too, and it is haunting. I'll say that. There's a lot of images that I will never get out of my head.
What's the name again?
The Banshees of Inisherin. It has Knuckles McGinty, and it has Colin Farrell in it.
Oh, that one.
Yeah.
Probably. Yeah. I wanted to see that one.
Brendan
Gleeson, right?
Brendan Gleeson.
Okay.
One thing I will say is, it's kind of fun. I don't know if you guys ever do this, but I like to look up interviews of people I like when a movie comes out like this. And the two of them on chat shows together are fucking adorable.
Aww.
Like, they've been friends for, I don't know, 30 years or something. And I don't know. I just love them so much. I don't have the same feeling as Quinn does about this movie, but McDonagh is talented, and he's working out some stuff in this movie, as I think he does in every movie that he makes. I don't know how I feel about this one. It wasn't what I thought it was going to be, for one thing. I think that, but that's on me. You know, I didn't know what I was getting into, and then when I was there, I was like, oh, kind of disappointed, just because it takes a long time for anything to really happen, and I didn't understand the motivation of of Brendan Gleeson's character, but there are images that I think are just gorgeous, and I love a lot of the dialogue and the relationship between the brother and the sister.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the animals in this movie are great as well.
They really are.
Yeah. And I don't know, I like to see that as well.
Okay, I'm going to go with Koroneko, which is a 1968 Japanese film that I did on the World of Foundational Horror podcast, episode 70. And I was just mentioning to Mac that I didn't know Shindo before I saw this movie. Now I want to see everything he ever made. I never knew that something could be so beautiful before I watched this movie. It's got supernatural elements in it. Again, it has, you know, like you were talking about, Mac, like the limitations of the time and the technology. So the effects that are created are really creative. And I won't say a lot about it because I already talked a lot about it on the podcast. But it was one of those experiences that I had this year where I didn't know this existed. And after I discovered it, I felt like I had been given this beautiful gift of cinema. And I feel transformed by it. I think it's a gorgeous movie. Incidentally, also just personally, I looked up other people who had talked about this movie online, and I found Dismembering Horror and Pillbox Movies, who are, you know, two of my favorite creators. So that was a nice thing that I found just in my personal fangirl life. But anyway, I would encourage everybody to seek out this movie. It's called Koroneko, which translates to Black Cat, and it's just an amazing film.
Good pick.
Thanks.
My next pick is going to be a movie that we are actually soon to be covering. It is the 1984 Threads, which I watched last November. My Letterboxd review literally says, made me feel sick to my stomach. Well done. And oh, <yeah. laughs> I guess I won't, you know, divulge too much since we're going to cover it soon. But obviously, I think all of us at some point have maybe thought about nuclear warfare and shit our pants a little bit. And so, like, I don't know, this movie just indulged my most morbid curiosities and truly illustrates the horrors of war in a very, like, great, like, great as in they did a great job. Like, this movie, in so many ways will make you feel sick to your stomach. And I know you might be hearing this and saying, like, why would I want to go through that? I don't know, but I did. And some part of me enjoys it. And I don't know, like, I remember watching Grave of the Fireflies when I was younger, and that was a similar movie of just being like, oh my God, this is horrifying. And also extra sad because, you know, that's actually based on a real historical occurrence. But I don't know, I think it's also important to watch stuff like this because I think this movie is not propaganda in any way. It just is a depiction, a fictional depiction, but a depiction nonetheless of like what would happen if you know, nuclear warfare happened in England. And that's all it is. And I don't know. If you're morbidly curious like me, I would recommend you watch it. But again, be wary that it will upset you. But that's the point. Endlessly fascinated for some reason by the horrors of war. Like, I'm definitely someone who's not interested in war in the way of, like, I don't know, wanting to learn about tactics or trying to debate, like, the ethics or anything. I think it's all horrible. And but a lot of media, a lot of books that I've read, like Johnny Got His Gun and like All Quiet on the Western Front, I don't know, I think they're such effective pieces of literature and media, and it makes you realize why it's such a horrible thing.
Yeah, I look forward to having a longer conversation with you, Mac. That's our next scheduled regular show that's coming up on that one and the day after, which was the American take around the same time.
So. Oh, yeah, these are, I commend you for going down this road. I'm uncomfortable.
It was rough.
I mean,
yeah. Like when I did get like legit nauseous watching it. Like it's sickening. And yet.
Okay, so my next pick is Paolo Sorrentino's The Hand of God. This one came out in 2021. I just watched it this year. It's on Netflix. It just went straight to Netflix. And if you know me, and if you listen to last year's picks, I picked The Young Pope, which was a Paolo Sorrentino series. And I love this film for all the reasons I loved that series. I think his work is whimsical, magical, and it's like a world I wanna live in. And sometimes when you do watch a lot of, like, I watch a lot of documentaries, and I end up going down sort of some sad roads as well, like with films that, you know, I'm into the idea of, and then the reality of it is a little bit harder to deal with. So when you do watch films like that at times, and then you look at something like his The Hand of God, or, you know, really any of his work that I've seen, it's just, it's this one especially, it's a coming of age story, and it's supposed to be very similar to his life growing up in Naples, and it's just gorgeous. I mean, there's some tragedy involved as well, but as there is for any coming of age story, because there has to be that tragedy in order to shape a person, but it's just gorgeous and it's whimsical, and I love him. I will watch anything that he does from here on out, and I will be first in line. So that is my third pick.
I didn't know that you had seen it, Quinn.
Yeah, I watched it in the summer.
Great. Yeah, I'm going to watch that too. I like him too. I agree with you that he just has this beautiful, it's just a whole world that you just sort of get immersed in.
Yeah, I don't know. It's so unique to me because I can't even verbalize exactly what it is. It's this, it's like, it's versions of reality that you know aren't real, but you want them to be, and you want them to exist because that's where you want to live. And I just think he does something that I've never seen a director do.
All right, my next pick is my only TV show pick, and it is Slow Horses, which is a spy series on Apple TV based on the novels of Mick Herron. And again, when I was younger, I watched Smiley's People on PBS with my mom, and so I just sort of, that the whole spy genre just sort of like got infused into my DNA. And this series involves rejects from MI5 who end up at a place called Slough House, and they're called Slow Horses, and they have to be supervised by one of the most disgusting characters in existence, played by Gary Oldman. And he hates them. He's perpetually drunk. He's perpetually farting. And he's absolutely, you know, sickening to be around. But he's brilliant. And so you just sort of get this, like, ragtag group of, like, you know, fuck-ups. And they fuck up in various ways. We have a recovering alcoholic, a recovering gambling addict in the second series. And in the very first scene, we see why Jack Loudon ends up there. And he ends up there because of just a ridiculous mistake that he makes. It's a training exercise. And so he doesn't think that he should end up there. But it's just absolutely entertaining. The supporting cast is also amazing because Jack Loudon's grandfather is played by Jonathan Pryce. And I just love it whenever he shows up. Kristen Scott Thomas is the the foil to Gary Oldman, and their scenes together are absolutely amazing. Sophie Okonedo, I think, is one of Quinn's favorites. She also shows up. But the acting is amazing. It's cinematic. It's a lot of fun. And I also wanted to shout out a podcast that I just found called Barbican Station, the Slough House podcast, where they go through all of the novels and then they go through all of the episodes. And so I've been turned on to the novels. A couple of them are available on what's that app we use, Mac?
Scribd.
Yes, on Scribd. And so I'm going through those, but I highly recommend it. Both series are completely out, and 3 and 4 have been picked up by Apple. So they're going to be coming hopefully this year. Just absolutely endlessly entertaining. And I just love it.
I want to go
and
back.
You love Gary Oldman.
I started watching it based on your suggestion. I don't know, maybe at the end of the summer. And now I'm excited to go back because I didn't finish it. I did enjoy it. And I love the farting, you know, of course, that was up my alley.
Of course.
I love those. I love farting. All right. There. So I was into it.
You heard it here first.
You heard it here first. Yeah. So I'm excited to go back into it. And also I want to say, how great is Apple? Like, I'm sorry, but they are doing really amazing things.
I've never had Apple TV.
You might. What is it? $6 a month? I think it's a good investment. I mean, there are some misses, but in general, their series are really good. In fact, I was on the fence. I'll just throw out one of my honorable mentions right now because I was on the fence between Severance and Slow Horses. And Severance is another series on Apple TV. Extremely well done. Friend of the show, Stefan, mentioned it in his top 5. It's an excellent show with Adam Scott and Christopher Walken and John Turturro, and just this amazing cast. And the concept is something I've actually used in my intro to philosophy class when we're talking about identity. And it's fantastic. And I went through that series twice. And loved it, but I just enjoyed the experience watching Slow Horses just a little more. So that's why it made the cut. But yeah, they're doing excellent work.
Yeah, and you know, I think that if you do get Apple, I my suggestion for you would be Schmigadoon. It's if I would have thought more about it, probably would have made last year's list, but I didn't think. I guess I blanked out, but it's kind of like a sort of a spoof on tropes and musicals. And it's just so cute and funny. And I don't know, it just is such a joyous show. And I really think that you would love it. I don't think it's for everyone, but I think that you would love it.
It's so, okay, this is like so off topic, but my whole life... People hating musicals has always been something that's baffled me. Like, obviously, anybody's allowed to feel however they feel. But that was one thing that, like, growing up, I was like, yeah, the thing we all love. And then talking to some people being like, absolutely not. I think it's horrible. I think it's shitty. I never want to watch these ever. And, like, with love, my boyfriend falls into this camp. Not that he doesn't feel that, you know, hateful, but he's definitely like, I've absolutely no interest. And he's really interested in music. And part of me is just like, how do you not like this?
Do you think some of it has to do with High School Musical and being like inundated? Because I feel like, I don't know, in my generation, it still was like, we all love musicals. Of course we love musicals. But I don't know if something happened in between me and you. And I think it might have been High School Musical.
I don't know. I'll tell you what. Everybody that I know, they won't say that, oh, High School Musical objectively is good, but my generation loves High School Musical. Like, there's no hatred towards it. Like, when it came out, my friend Maddie and I had, like, a whole party, and I've never actually seen the second and third installments, but all my friends swear up and down that they're also, like, cultural, I don't know, pillars. But I don't know what it is, though. I honestly think Cats did something to unsettle everybody. And I'm not talking about 2019. I'm talking all the way back when, because that's always the one scapegoat everybody uses is they're like, even if they like a musical, they'll usually say, well, it's not some dumb shit like Cats. And I don't understand it because that's also one of my favorites. So I think everybody just has bad taste except for me.
No, I think it has to do with what I've heard people say is it just makes no sense that people would break out in song. And like, they can't get past that like hurdle.
But I love Star Wars.
Yeah, that makes me exactly. I love musicals because it's such a great, and I don't really know anything about music, mm-hmm. but I know what I like, and I think it's just another way to tell a story.
Yeah. And
I love to hear good singing and see dancing as well, and it doesn't bother me that people are, I get it, right? Just like if you were watching a science fiction movie, you'd be like, oh, yeah, of course they're in space because we're talking about science fiction. I don't think it's any one musical, but it would be interesting to to dive a little deeper when people say, like, I just can't make that leap.
Yeah, I've been starting my film class with Singin' in the Rain, and when I have a face-to-face class, I talk about it before we watch the film. It's really, like, the very perfect film to start off a film class because it's an education in film. It really is, you know... It really is covering a facet of the move from silent films to talkies. But I have a lot of people that have this idea of musicals, and they have, you know, it's a stumbling block to them. Because we're also talking a lot about, in the beginning, audience expectations. And so if your expectations are of one thing, they are so negative, and you go in watching it as the first assignment in a class, I mean... How terrible is that, you know? But they all love Singin' in the Rain when we're done with it, so.
Yeah. I mean, how can you watch Make 'em Laugh and not be like, this is a great film? Or even, gosh, them tap dancing in the Moses Supposes. I rewatch that, like, maybe on a monthly basis just because it makes me so happy.
I know. I'm, like, just staring at the screen like... That Moses Supposes is my absolute favorite, and I, like you, will rewatch that so much. And I do always play that scene after we've finished watching the movie, just to have them watch the choreography and like the talent that is just oozing off of the screen. It's incredible,
right? All right, so my fourth pick is the movie Turning Red, which came out this year. This was directed by Domi Shu. I could be saying that wrong. This is a Disney Pixar flick. And I used to be very, very, very into Pixar when I was younger, but I've kind of fallen off a little bit. But I really feel like this movie is just a work of art, both in story and visuals, everything about it. It like made me sob like a little baby. And it's so great to see a movie or a TV show and you think like, oh my God, thank goodness that this is here for kids now. And maybe how different like my brain would have been if I had seen something like this when I was a kid, because the message of like suppressing your true self and suppressing like the cringy, quirky you in order to fit a mold, like, will literally, like, make you sick. And, like you'll gain your such a better community and such better friends being yourself, and people will love you like that. I don't know. What a great message. And it also looks beautiful. And the music is great. I feel like this was a little bit before my time, like, this time period and the age the girls are. But I still remember this, and I feel like they capture that vibe perfectly as well. And there was some drama about it because people were upset that the movie was too inclusive, which obviously there's always some randos upset about that. But again, I would label that as an absolute win for this movie. And it was so much, but in such a good way. It made me feel so many things.
Have you seen it, Christina?
Yeah, I saw it too. And I agree with what Max said. It didn't hit me in the same way. I do think it's probably for people 35 and younger, because there's a lot of like 90s culture in it. Not to say you can't enjoy it otherwise, but it does sort of speak to that demographic. I do like it. It's kind of like Everything Everywhere All at Once, where you have a tension between being a child of an immigrant and trying to fit in with your social group and trying to do American style things that clash.
In this case, Canadian.
In this case, Canadian, that clash with what your parents at home would like you to do. But yeah, I'm glad that this kind of thing is being made now, and it's not just a one-off, it just seems to be a trend.
Like Encanto, like that, this beat, you can't have two animated in your fave, but this did beat Encanto for me, because while I it's still a great film, they made that during the, like, it was a lot of people working from home, and I'm not trying to diss them, that's obviously really great that they did that in spite of, like, out of safety, but unfortunately it does show a lot of the like mouth flaps and the speaking just doesn't match, and that throws me way off, because I'm really into the visuals of it, and when it's that obvious, and I don't think the voice acting is good. I really wish we would stray away from just getting the biggest names possible for voice acting. Like, everybody did their best, but they're not good at it. I'm sorry. Like, I love that lady from Brooklyn Nine-Nine. She's great. She's not a bad actress. But you could have found a better voice actor, in my opinion. And somebody younger. The person she plays is 16 years old. And the whole time I thought she was like 19. Anyways, I think this kind of edges it out. But both are still really great movies, talking about like generational trauma and like working through that and trying to both understand why your parents are the way that they are, while also trying to repair that and both get to a better place. Like, that's so important. Anybody could relate to that. Yeah.
I'm going to see it.
Would recommend if you haven't seen it.
I'm going to see it.
You will cry, though.
Yeah. A lot makes me cry these days, but every Pixar movie will.
Me too.
I mean, of course.
I cried at like a sweet TikTok of like, I don't know, somebody being like, I'm so glad that I'm in love with my partner and I don't even know them. And I was like, I'm glad too.
I think we are in a sort of like fragile moment, like astrologically or something. Like, I've just found them. And I know, I mean, personally, I just moved and that's a lot of stress. And then I'm starting a new semester in a couple of days. That's a lot of stress. So, but I've been on the verge of tears for about 3 weeks and like really anything. Also, I've been laughing uproariously. So I just feel like, you know, there's something. Yeah. highs and lows. But I know I'm not the only one, because I've heard other people say
similar. Yeah. And is it?
I also feel very unhinged.
Is it Mercury in the microwave or whatever?
Yeah, Mercury is in the microwave.
I don't know when it gets out, but I'm ready for it.
Let's see. I'm looking up. Why wouldn't you just say it?
Actually, that guy that I send you, Instagram things, Quinn, the meditation. Oh. Didn't he say like Mercury's in Shitrograde? And he had a whole meditation about like, you know, dealing with it.
Thank you for curating my Instagram videos, Christina. Oh my god,
it's so great.
I'm so happy. It's like you know me. You know?
I do know you. And I do the same thing for a Mr. C, and they're completely different.
I bet.
So, I'm spending like a lot of time on Instagram.
They're like gifts.
Yeah.
Did you find out when we get out of it, Mac?
January 18th.
Oh jeez.
So you got a little bit more time. Hang in there.
Dang, okay. All right.
Well, Quinn, what's your fourth
pick? All right. Well, my fourth pick is, you might call it a little cheating, but I'm not going to call it cheating. It is, yes, a movie I have seen before this year, but it is a movie that I saw a lot this year and really came to adore. I loved it from the beginning. Let's be honest. But it is Sarah Polley's Stories We Tell from 2012. And I actually took a documentary class in the spring of last year, and it was so great. But, you know, in the end, we could do a project on tying different things, you know, different films together. And one of the films that I connected with other elements was Stories We Tell. So I had to really watch it over and over again. And it's a film, it's a personal film for her about her family and just her mother and stories about her mother. And then, you know, some things, some mysteries come to light throughout the film. But really, she's just asking these basic questions to people in her sort of inner circle, and she's getting some different answers. And I just love the way that she did it. I think it's beautifully done. And I think it would be a very difficult task to do with people who you are so close with. This is another film that, another documentary that had some reenactments, but they were more obvious than The Rescue. Just a connection there. And the other thing I want to say about this one is that it's kind of like I'm really revving up to her new film called Women Talking that's out in a couple of days that she directed. I cannot wait to see that. It's been pushed back. I think it's either out like as of yesterday or it's pushed back another week, but it has Frances McDormand in it and a number of other amazing actresses. But I cannot wait to see it because she is an artist that I will watch, you know, whatever she does, just like Sorrentino. I just think she has a unique voice, and it's not a magical, whimsical world like Sorrentino's, but it's something that I am really into, and I think her work is it's intuitive, and it feels personal. And it's quiet, and I love that. So I'm excited. And also, if you haven't seen Stories We Tell, it's a really good watch, and I would recommend it to anyone.
My mom and I were huge Sarah Polley fans. I still am. She's not, because she's dead. But I recommend that one too. It goes some places you don't expect, and
yeah, it's fun. It is. It does go places you don't expect. It's got some mystery in there, and it solves some things, and it also leaves you not knowing everything and not being able to tie it all together. And I think that's one of the points that she's, you know, attempting to make overall, is that a person isn't just one thing. It's a lot of different things, and there's a lot of layers of that, and we never fully maybe know somebody. So I think it provokes some good questions.
My next pick is called My Heart Can't Beat Unless You Tell It To, and this movie came out in 2020. This is Jonathan Cuartas' first film, and kind of like Glass Onion, his brother Michael is a cinematographer, and it stars Patrick Fugit, Ingrid Sophie Schramm, and Owen Campbell, who is also in another one of my Fave 6 picks this year, but it tells the story of these three who are dealing with a tragedy, which is that one of them is a vampire. And he's sort of emotionally stunted. He's been kept inside the house for his whole life. And the other siblings have to procure blood for him. And I think it's a really wonderful vampire movie in the same way that Somos Lo Que Hay is a really wonderful movie about cannibals. So it takes the theme in just a more human direction than we often see in those kind of films. And I've seen it, I don't know, 4 or 5 times. It really is dependent on the performances of these actors, and they all deliver. And it's not a perfect film, but I feel like I'm close to these characters, and I heard an interview with Coartas when he was talking about when one of his parents or grandparents was dying, and he has a very large family, and they were all gathered together, and they knew, you know, the inevitable outcome. And it's just, how do you deal with something that's so profoundly sad, you know? And that's sort of what gave him the idea for this movie. And I think he's a beautiful filmmaker. I can't wait to see what else he does. And so that's my fourth pick.
Yeah. Nice. Well, my penultimate pick is what I have to, like, it's not the number one because it's not the best cinematic experience of this year, but it is what I've dedicated the most time to, maybe in my life, to one show. It is the show One Piece that premiered in 1999 and is still going, based off the manga that started in 1997 that is still going. It, for those who don't know, it is the story of a young boy named Luffy who wants to be the king of the pirates. It is set in a fantasy world. It very much is a fantasy show set in this world that is basically shaped around pirates. But there's these things called devil fruits, which give you a special power, basically. So he is now a rubber man. He can, like, stretch his arms out and, you know, twist his body up and whatnot, but he can no longer swim. So that's the trade-off. And I just gotta say, it is over 1,000 episodes. Alan and I are on episode 700 something, and it truly is a hugely touching story about friendship and companions and found family and finding the will to live and be happy. And that is so incredible and powerful. There's so many arcs that just revolve around wanting to get past this horrible thing that's happened to you and live. And I think that's such a powerful message. On the other side, too, I went into this thinking, oh, funny little show with some parts that will make me cry. And it's literally all about the horrors of fascism. And you would never expect that going in, but it's like, there's like a navy that's against the pirates, and you might be like, oh, of course, the navy. And it really is a take on the government and the police and how corrupt it is and how it just serves to be a body. Like, the police and the government just serve to be a bodyguard for the most privileged class of people who then use their power to do horrible things, like, because they think that they're fundamentally better people. Like, you would never think that going into it. And it has brought me so much joy and so much passion. And this year, Alan and I, our Christmas presents to each other were 100% One Piece themed. I gave him a t-shirt and the second box set of the manga, and he gave me a sweatshirt and a hat. So,
you mention this series like every time that we talk about our fave watches from the previous month. And I'm so glad that you found this piece of art that you can share with your boyfriend, you know, and it really does seem like, you know, it's become a really big part of your lives together, you know, and that's just such a cool thing when you can share something like that with someone.
Yeah, and that's a great point, because I never would have watched it without him. And it really is the most we have ever, like, bonded on a show before, because we'll just sit there and cry about it and then talk about it in the car later. Like, what do you think is this motivation for this character? Or, like, what do you think would happen if they were in this situation? I mean, it really speaks to the creator, Oda's, like, how he's fleshed these characters out. Also, on the art side, it has given me so much inspiration, because this man is so good at drawing. And I'm also reading the manga now, and it's just like, I just get blown away by it, because something I love is anatomy, but not trying to do one-to-one realism, like trying to make a cartoony character, but have anatomy that makes sense. And that's like one of the hardest things to capture. I mean, it's why, like, when they teach you in art class, you have to learn the realistic stuff before you can do, like, the Picasso stuff, because you don't even know what you're referencing yet. And this man does it so well. And I'm just so inspired because he started the manga around my age. And I just think that's crazy. What an awesome person. But there are some problematic parts of the show, which are a bummer. But I have to mention that. But I think just if it's written by one person and they're not 100% with it, you'll see that stuff.
I would also recommend to you, Matt, the Guillermo del Toro Pinocchio, if you have any interest at all. And I said that Kate Blanchett played a spider. She actually plays a monkey. I don't know what I was thinking. But it's got a great cast as well. And it's I think you'd like it because it's stop motion and animation, and it also has the background of fascism, which is just crazy that he would do that with the Pinocchio story, but it works.
I love him.
There's so many really great set pieces. There's like a, you know, a part that's in the ocean. Anyway, there's like all these really great pieces, and it to me, I have to watch it again because it's like so staggering. You know, it's kind of like Mad God. Like you can't take it all in. You know, at once. You need to digest it over multiple viewings. I do anyway, but I think you'd like it.
We should do it for Squad.
Okay.
Squad Revival.
Squad Revival.
I'm going to have to tell you that I can't do Pinocchio.
Oh,
okay, it's that's fine.
Totally fine.
It's the Fantasy Island bit or whatever. It's the donkey stuff that freaks me out. I don't even know if that's part of the real story that's in the new one.
I don't think so.
But the trauma surrounding that is just too much.
This one will definitely make you cry. It will rip your heart guts out.
Yeah.
Del Toro's not fucking around.
No, he never is.
No. Never does.
I think as a kid, the Disney version, you know, I can't remember what this island is called that they go to, but if you're bad.
The island of like.
If you're bad, if you're.
Naughty
bad
boy.
If you're a bad boy or whatever, you like slowly get turned into a donkey. I don't know if this is even correct. I'm scared though now, and I think I've made up this.
Okay, let's move on. We can move on. You don't have to watch Pinocchio. You never have to watch Pinocchio. From what Mac just said, I thought that he might like it, so that's why I mentioned it at all. Quinn, what's your fifth?
So my fifth is a none other than a movie that has been at the top of many others' lists, Joseph Kosinski's Top Gun Maverick. 2022. Now, can I say anything new about this film that hasn't been said? No, probably not. So will I struggle and try to? No. All I will say is that I loved this film, and I had so much fun watching it. And, yeah, I am a Tom Cruise fan. And, yeah, this was something I was going to end up watching. But I got pushed back so many times that I forgot about it and no longer cared. Then I found myself in a theater watching it. And oh shit, it was fun. It was so much fun. I love me some Miles Teller. I love me some Tom Cruise. So yeah, it is really that fun. And if you haven't seen it, you should because it's fun. And it's an experience and it's not typically one of my picks. That would be a typical Quinn pick, but it's great. I loved it. I loved how they wove in so much of the original, and there were so many throwbacks, and you don't really need to have seen and grown up with the original to enjoy this, I don't think, in any way. But if you did, you will probably enjoy it more.
I disagree with you, though, Quinn. I didn't predict this was going to be on your top six picks, but it makes total sense. Knowing the complete cuckoo bird bananas fan you are for Tom Cruise, and you have been your whole life, you had biographies of him in your bedroom when you were a little girl, and So, I mean, I get it. I mean, I don't get it, but I get it for you.
I mean, do I want to be like this? Am I glad I am this way? I don't know, but this is who I am. It is in my DNA. And yeah, Maverick. See it.
I haven't watched it yet, but it's definitely a good one for me if I need a movie to watch with my dad. I feel like this is a movie
he definitely
I know he loved. Also, there was a woman on the plane I was with who loved, like, I've heard so many other, nobody really connected, but like a slew, like right when I'm least expecting it, somebody will be like, I love Top Gun Maverick, so I need to watch this film.
I mean, I was really amazed. It was at the top of film versus films list.
Wow.
And those boys.
And they're British.
Yeah, I know, but I think Martin does have some connection to aviation. I don't know what it is. But
I just meant more like, you know, the American military.
No, yeah. No, it's total, you know, propaganda for, you know, the American military. But I mean,
that's so fun.
Yeah, lots of fun.
Listen, none of us are immune.
No, not at all.
Yeah. I mean, I wish I could think more for myself, but I can't.
If something is packaged so well and is so enjoyable, how are you expected to defend against it?
Yeah, also, who cares? You like what
you're also.
Right. No, I can't. You know, I've come to terms with my love for that man. I don't love that I love him, but I freaking can't deny it. Even the Scientology bit, I don't like that. I hate that. I think it's dangerous and scary. He's a good actor.
Yes, I know, and he's such a big part of your life. I mean, I think we all have these kind of people sometimes, especially if it's somebody that we grew up with and they're still, you know, performing in movies or TV. It's just like, you know.
And it never was the person themselves. It was like the idea of them. So, I mean, that idea and the love you had for them at one point is still pure and like, I feel like we think the best of these people in a way. So then when you hear that they have like the most insane viewpoint or have done the most insane thing, sometimes you have to just be like, well, I'll just live in the time before I knew that. And it was just the idea that I loved.
Yeah. Also, a connection I forgot to make, Quinn, with Green Onion and your boy.
Glass Onion? That- Green Onion.
Green Onion. With green eggs and ham.
I do have to make my salad for today, but the movie Glass Onion has Edward Norton's character who modeled his past self character costume-wise on Tom Cruise's character in Magnolia.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's...
It's undeniable that Tom Cruise has had a profound impact on the culture.
He's a fixture.
And I mean, his role in Magnolia, I mean, we talked about it on the podcast.
We talked about it a lot.
Holy, I mean, that's a powerful role to connect with and emulate in any way for Norton, you know? I mean, it really is.
Can I tell y'all something tragic, though, is that I had a teacher, 4th through 6th grade, Mr. James, who did not look, he had a ponytail, so he did not look exactly like him, but kind of a little bit, for child me, I put the two in the same folder, and I hated Mr. James. So Tom Cruise didn't even do anything, but ever, like, you know how some people, like, taint a whole name for you or something? Mm-hmm. Like, you meet one mean Tiffany, and suddenly every Tiffany is like, well, I've been through this before. You have no reason to feel this way, but you do. That's how I've always felt about him. I wish I could push through.
No, I think that's okay. I think it's good to feel that way.
Well, my 5th pick is X. And classic. I chose this because this is a movie that I saw with Mac at the Alamo Draft House in Raleigh. We both have been looking forward to it. And the visceral experience of watching this movie is something that I still remember, especially the scene where Pearl is sort of lusting after one of the other characters. And that scene goes on for quite a while. And I just remember squirming in my seat, just like trying to like escape what I was watching. It also does a lot of really, really fun things. Like the feminist conversation in the center of the movie that's talking about women's empowerment and ownership of their sexuality is something that doesn't typically show up in a slasher film. The fact that Martin Henderson still is rocking a great body.
He looked amazing.
Amazing! And I always love it when Brittany Snow shows up in a huge, you know, blonde
I love her.
Wig. Amazing. The themes in the movie that I think we can all relate to, some of us more than others, about aging and longing for the past. The kills are amazing. And the performances are really, really great. And there are surprises that pay off. And then you get to the end of the film, you get through the credits, and you see that Ty West and Mia Goth in secret in New Zealand at the same time filmed a prequel called Pearl.
That was
Pearl.
Amazing. I was so excited. Like you, like they truly did such a great job of hyping that up. Because after you see a movie that was already so great, then you're like, "Ah, I get more. That's awesome." And I'll say also, I think Kid Cudi did an amazing job. I think he both did a great job acting, but also I cannot deny that man is so fine. And he looked great. And also I think the message of the, like you called it lust. And I think that word is good. And also like yearning that women feel for like the idealized, perfect, like female body, like even yes. Obviously the connotations of like age and aging and whatnot are like mostly there, but even I can like definitely relate to that. Like, and I think most people who grew up as like young girls can relate to that of like almost like this, you can feel a sort of like deep, dark envy because it's just something that for women is presented as like, here's the, for you, the best way to become the best you can be is like, this is your worth right here. And then you see somebody with it and it's just like, so I just thought that scene was so poignant. You don't see that talked about as often.
Okay.
I feel like.
I am going to watch this once we are done today. I haven't seen it yet. I don't know why, because you both have been telling me I need to see it for months and months. I'm doing it. Mark my words. I am finding it after we are done recording. I'm watching it tonight.
I can't. Please tell us
and
your
I'm
thoughts.
I'm excited.
I hope you love it. I think you will really,
it's really, funny
really
too.
Dig it. Yes, there's a lot of humor in it. Anyone who loves horror, I think, should watch this film. And I just love it that Ty West makes movies. I just hope he never stops.
He's getting better and better. Because, okay, can I say something real controversial?
Do it.
I feel like I'm the only one who has this opinion, and that's fine. But I have never liked House of the Devil. From the moment I saw it, I disliked that movie. And then when I saw it was one of those things like with The Witch. And I think, oh, everybody feels this way because it's bad. And then everybody else is like, no, this is really great. And then I'm like, oh, I'm definitely the problem then because everybody loves this movie. But I watched it again and still I was like, no, I don't like this. But I'm liking everything else he's making. So that's something I've been holding, that opinion.
That's okay.
But I think he's getting better and better.
I feel like people, I mean, you don't have to love everything that he makes. I think a lot of people don't like The Innkeepers, whereas I love it, you know, and I can't wait for you to watch that one too. But I know some people hate The Sacrament, and I don't like found footage movies, but I think it's good. I think it's good. I mean, I do think he is getting better and better. And I know that Comfort Films put Pearl and X together. Mm-hmm. I do slightly prefer X, but the other day I saw a picture of Mia Goth on that ladder with the scarecrow. And I was just so like, oh, amazing. Yeah. There's like this whole crazy thing in the middle of that movie where she does a dance with a scarecrow in a field. Like,
she's just great.
He and she are just making art, you know. And they're just fantastically talented people.
I would like to see the Innkeepers too. Maybe we should do a squad.
That's okay, the squad.
Let's squad it out.
Ex-Pinocchio.
Yeah.
Innkeepers.
Well, Mac, you can watch Pinocchio when you come to visit.
Yeah, oh, yeah. But for squad. Okay.
But Mac, what's your last best pick?
Honestly, this was a no-brainer for me. My number one absolute best cinematic experience this year came from RRR, which also came out this year, directed by S.S. Rajamouli. It is the fictional history of two legendary revolutionaries' journey away from home before they began fighting for their country in the 20s. This movie has everything. Everything. Musicals. Fighting against colonialism. Fighting against racism, dancing, action, gore, romance, like bromance, friendship, found family, the difference between fighting within the system and just tearing the whole system down, getting closer to your roots, and oh my God, it is so long and so you might need to set aside some time, but when you do and you just sit down and you watch it, oh man, you are just going to be so happy that you did. I already love and RRR stands for Rise, Roar, Revolt. Hell yeah. This is just a beautiful movie. Beautiful and very fun. I think if you just go into this thinking, I'm just going to have the time of my life, you will.
Yep. I second all of that. This was also on Devin DeMattia's list, his original list. We actually had to do his twice. But anyway, at one point it was on one of his lists and it is incredible. Even if you don't like Bollywood or Tollywood movies, I would encourage you to watch it because it will hook you and it's a commitment that you'll be happy that you made. It's just a great time.
And if you are attracted to men, it's a feast for the eyes. Both male pro tags are both amazing at acting, dancing, and looking fine. So what more can I say?
That's an embarrassing hole for me. I haven't seen it yet. So I don't know what I'm waiting for.
I feel like I haven't seen anything on like your list. And so
this is cool because I'm excited about all of your picks, both of you, you know, the ones that you're choosing that I haven't seen now, I'm really into seeing.
Well, what's your last pick?
Okay, my last pick is a TV show that was on Apple this year, 2022, called Bad Sisters. And yeah, Christina called this for sure. This is going to be my most enjoyable pick. I found it and I told everyone about it before it was all out. So that's kind of a risk for me because, you know, sometimes things don't pan out to be exactly what we want them to be. But everyone I told to watch watched it and loved it. I got my brother to watch it. I got my mom to watch it. I got Christina to watch it. I got my friend Kathy to watch it. Anyway, whatever. I got people to watch it. It's very good. I am a real big Sharon Horgan fan, and, you know, I'll watch her do anything, I think, at this point. I'm in, and she sort of heads this cast. And I'll just read the really quick plot summary in case people haven't heard of this, because I fully, fully recommend. The show follows the Garvey sisters, who are bound together by the death of their parents, and a promise to always protect each other. And it starts with the death of one of their husbands. I mean, that's the whole show, the beginning of the show. So I'm not giving much away, but the whole show is really about their relationships with each other. And it's really powerful. And Sharon Horgan, you know, plays one of the sisters. Eve Hewson, who I love, plays a sister. Sarah Green, Anne-Marie Duff, and Eva Birthistle? I'm saying that wrong, and I'm so sorry. But it's just well acted. It's got some cool twists that I didn't see coming. I think you may have seen them coming, Christina, or some of them, but I don't think that you're very smart with that. So even if you saw it, you know, I think it's surprising in ways. Something that I don't usually care much about is like the wardrobe, but I was like dying and drooling over every person's clothing in every episode. Just, and that's not something I normally am provoked by in any way, but I wanted all their wardrobes. And I don't know, I think it's just an amazing show that's, it will make you laugh hard. It will make you cry at times. It is mysterious in that you don't know exactly what happens. You are rooting for people who are not exactly doing straight up things, you know, and I like that. I like the gray morality of some of these characters. And I think it's thought provoking. And Christina, you and I had a number of conversations on sort of some of the morality and ethics. And I like those conversations. And I think they've already signed on for a second season. So another amazing Apple show. And yeah, I don't know. If you haven't seen it and you have, you know, 5 or 6 hours, you will not be disappointed because it has everything. Like I said, you're going to laugh. You're going to grieve and cry. You're going to be shocked. And it's just fun. I loved it.
Yeah. Countryside is also gorgeous. Mm. And our friend of the show, Michael Smiley, also plays a very sweet character.
Oh, great.
I wish.
My name is Joe. But Michael Smiley, get in touch. We love you. We'd love to have you on the podcast.
He's listening and like, what?
Oh, I didn't know.
Is that my name? Yeah, I also fully sign on. Eric Winnick, friend of the show, signs on. He has a couple of really great articles about Bad Sisters out there. One's on Medium. I don't remember where the other one was. And I read them before I knew him, which was pretty cool. But anyway, yeah, it's a great show. It's really enjoyable, really entertaining. Writing's good, acting is good. I mean, it just hits on all
sides. Yeah, it's fun too. Just like a lot of our picks this year. It's just, I think we need that fun, and it's there.
Yes.
Well, my last pick with a bullet is Decision to Leave by Park Chan-wook. Devoted fans that we are of his work. We have done shows on some of his films, Lady Vengeance, Handmaiden. And this one, with Park Chan-wook, you get your money's worth because you basically get two movies in one. And that's what this one is. You have the first part of the story where the male protag is falling in love with his murder suspect. And then you get the second part of the movie where that is reversed. And it wouldn't be a Park Chan-wook movie if it ended in a marriage. It's not a comedy, it's a tragedy. But there's so much that goes on in the storytelling with the photography. He's got tons of reflections, that's no surprise, but he's got characters who don't speak the same language, and they're using technology to communicate with each other, and he moves the focus in and out when they're passing the translator between them, and not just their being reflected in a mirror, and their reflections are going in and out of focus. It's just really super incredible. There's all this symbolism, if you like puzzles like I do, it all fits together. Even like the sushi soy sauce fish relate to each other. Then you've got the symbolism of the mountains and the sea, and you've got, I mean, all this stuff. I could go on and on, but I won't. It was directed by Park Chan-wook and written by him and also his longtime collaborator Jung Suk-young. And it also, Mac, involves the lead, who was the soft-handed suspect in Memories of Murder. So it just pays off in all these really amazing ways. It kind of reminded me of another one of my honorable mentions, Drive My Car, which is a Japanese movie that also talks about communicating across various languages. I feel like sometimes the writers and the directors are tapping into my psyche. I mean, this one was pretty much custom built for my brain, and I had a blast watching this, and it's one of my favorite movie going experiences from the last year.
I saw it as well, and I really liked it a lot, and I think I need to watch it several more times, but I love a film that is going to take the time to like really set you up within anxiety and suspense in terms of following someone. Like, I love the idea of voyeurism and how it's portrayed in different movies. And sometimes it's done in such a shitty way. And I just was, you know, because the beginning of this movie, it's so much about following her and looking when she doesn't think that he's looking, but really, like, you find out that she did, you know, what, I don't know, just there's layers of beautiful layers. I loved that. And Drive My Car was also, it came in like a smidge. I had to kick it off because, I don't know, but it was an honorable mention. And I enjoyed that more than this experience, but I want to watch this one again and again. And I had to ask you a bunch of questions too about it. It didn't, I think watching it once, there's so much subtle beauty that it didn't sink in fully. So I want to watch this one at least another time and soon, but I really, really enjoyed the experience too.
Did you watch it, Mac?
Not yet. I know.
Oh, I'm like jealous of you having not seen it yet.
My time has been taken up by video games and One Piece, so I need to squeeze in some time.
Just squeeze it, or you can watch it when you come visit me. But I mean,
we should.
It's you have to sit and watch it, but you're rewarded with the photography and the storytelling, and I just love what he's doing. And I mean, I was really anticipating this movie, and then it came. It was like in Raleigh for like 15 minutes, and we missed it. So then I watched it on Mubi, and I really wish I could have seen it on the big screen, but it's so good. And I know that some people are disappointed because it's not as violent as like Old Boy or something like that. But
he's always been best at storytelling, though.
And it's really the violence that these characters do to each other's souls. I mean, that's where the violence is within these characters. And I have to say, I hate her and what she does in this movie. And it's just so horribly romantic. And, you know, I hate romance, this kind of romance where it's like tortured and whatever. But it's just a great portrayal of that, this like impossible love, which, you know, fuck that. But it's a great, great movie. I know we've been going on for a while. Did we have any honorable mentions or just honorable mentions that we wanted to mention?
I have an honorable mention then, since we talked a little bit about Drive My Car. I won't go there, but another TV show that I highly enjoyed this year and came out this year on Peacock is called The Resort. And I think it's about 8 episodes and they're short, and it's kind of a blending of genres. You have, it's sort of suspense, sort of sci-fi, magical, drama, comedy. I loved it. It was a fun world. It's it kind of, the premise is this couple who's, you know, kind of going through a lull in their relationship, in their marriage. They go to this resort and kind of uncover this mystery, and there's some parallels that are happening, and it's really good. If you have access to Peacock, I would absolutely suggest it, because it is one of those, again, that has, I think, everything. And I think you would know by the first episode if you're in or not. And the episodes are pretty short. So, you know, you won't get too far in if you don't like it. You can turn it off. But if you are in, then you will just go deep, further down this rabbit hole. It's kind of, it kind of reminded me of shows like Lost, End of the OA, and, you know, kind of that, those kind of magic adventures. And I love that.
Yeah, I thought it was a lot of fun. I think, again, like, I think you really went, like, all in on the show. And I didn't go all the way in, but I did have a really great time.
Yes.
I wanted to mention Pachinko, which is also an Apple show, which talks about Japanese and Korean issues stemming from the occupation of South Korea. And also The Dropout, which I think was a Hulu show about Elizabeth Holmes. And Amanda Seyfried did a fucking amazing job. And it really stuck with me. Like, I don't really care about that person, but the performance kept me coming back, you know, in this, like, short series. And Amanda Seyfried is somebody to watch, at least for me. I never really did much for me before this, but I was super impressed by her performance.
I really enjoyed the short documentary that they did on the real Elizabeth Holmes. I also don't care about her, but as somebody who worked at a biotech startup, it wasn't the exact same thing, obviously, but very similar vibes to what it seemed like they were doing there. So I felt a spiritual connection. I wanted to give a dishonorable mention to Nicole Kidman. This is another reminder that I don't want you to be in movies anymore. I saw two movies with her this year that she, I'm not going to say ruined, but definitely took a star off. One being The Northman. I took a whole star off because of her. And Before I Go to Sleep, that wasn't ever going to be a good movie, but she certainly wasn't helping. I don't know if I saw anything else with her, but those two really stick out. And I would just like to put it out again. She's been in enough movies. We can retire her now.
Oh, Mac.
I just don't like her.
I'm fully on board with you, Mac. I'm not a fan. Once I realized she's not a good actress, I just got incredibly angry at all of the hours that I've spent watching her. And she's not good, and she needs to be stopped, and I'm with you, absolutely.
Get her out of there!
Oh, yeah. I want to send you the AMC commercial, too, because I feel like we've talked about that, and you have to see it. You're going to be so mad, though.
Please.
Christina and I watched it in her office one day for, like, I don't know, we watched it, like, 7 times. And we were just walking around saying the lines. So terrible.
It's infuriating.
But I will say, God, she's great and Far and Away. Okay, that could be a Tom Cruise thing.
I'm pretty sure that's what that is.
People don't like her in that either, but I love that movie. But yeah, get it. I want to send you the commercial now, Mac. I will.
Please.
I've said it before, but I'll say it again. They/Them was an abomination. It should never have been made. I don't know. Oh, what the fuck? That was all about. And I saw that a lot of people on, like, horror Instagram were, like, you know, championing it. But again, we didn't like that one that everybody loved last year, Malignant. So,
oh my,
you know, sometimes
fucking Malignant.
Malignant.
But it was such a wasted opportunity, and it's just bad.
Waste of opportunity, waste of my time.
Yeah. I wanted to say something about They Them. I made it all the way until 5, 7 minutes until the end, and fucking turned the movie off 7 minutes until the end.
I don't know why you do that. Like, you stopped watching that show, The Dollhouse, like 7 minutes before the end, too. You're like, nope.
I'm yeah, done. It makes me feel so good and superior in ways that I can't explain.
I'm like, you can't stick it out for 20 more minutes.
Nope.
But yet you'd watch the whole movie of Old.
That was one that should have earned me a spot on the Quinn doesn't get to pick movies anymore list.
Oh, that movie was terrible. But I mean, you wouldn't think so.
Well, y'all were fools for it, because when you told me, when I said I was going to watch it and you were like, don't, I couldn't get past 5 minutes. So my question is, how did y'all get past 5 minutes?
You paid for
minutes?
It. There's something, if you pay
yeah,
money,
I think that's what it was.
Oh, that's fair. That's yeah. fair. You have to watch yeah. it.
I also wanted to dishonorably mention Speak No Evil, which the more I think about it, the more angry I get, because Wolf Creek does exist, and so there's absolutely no reason to have this movie exist, and it's terrible, and it will make you feel like garbage if you do watch it, and I don't want anyone to feel that way. But what the fuck, man? Like, the violence that we have to see inflicted on this child is just absolutely
oh yeah
out of pocket. And it's stupid. And it's also just stupid. And I hate stupid things.
Yeah, I thought that looked good. And I said something to you and you had just seen it. And you were like, no, Quinn, this is not for you. Yeah. And I just got rid of the idea. And I won't ever do it. So thank you for that.
One thing that I wanted to make note of is that almost without fail, everybody that we talked to on our all-guest show chose Nope as their Fave 5 watch, and none of us mentioned it. And so I just wanted to, as we close out this sesh, see if you guys wanted to say anything about Nope.
I'm not even going to say I was... There was a lot I did love about that movie. Steven Yeun, everything with that monkey. Kiki Palmer and Daniel Kaluuya's performances. All of that. And I like Jordan Peele as a creator. But besides those things, I was not a fan. And I was surprised. It was one of those movies, again, where I was like, oh, wow, everybody loves this. What did I do wrong?
Yeah, I saw it only once, and I've meant to watch it time and time again since. I don't know. I can't talk about it because I've only seen it once, and I don't feel like I would be doing it justice. But I will say that I liked it, and I'm really interested in going back and rewatching it. But it wasn't something that was going to make my list. I mean, it wasn't a contender or anything. And it might be something I grow to love more in the future. I do think that some of the stuff in it, when I think back at it, I just flip out over it. Like the reminiscence of these, like, I don't know, like of Jaws or even just like this sort of romantic view of thinking that humans can control things, you know. I like that, and I think I'm gonna like it more the more I watch it, but maybe I won't. But I think if I were to kind of rate his, of course I'm gonna go with Get Out first, and then I would go with Nope, and then Us.
Wow. See, I will agree, when I left the theater with Us, I was kind of disappointed a little bit, and it was one of those that I had to read up on and watch it again. And then, I mean, there was a lot of, like, yeah, I don't think anything for me compares to Get Out in the same way, but I think, again, in Us, a lot of the performances, like, I like a lot of things separately, but maybe not the whole thing.
Yeah, I think I'm an outlier in how I feel about Us, but I think it's almost because I think he mixed up something, a piece of perfection that just amps my anxiety in a bad way for some reason. It's too intense almost, but I don't know. What about you, Christina? I know you probably are the only one of us that has seen Nope twice.
Yeah, I saw Nope recently with my fella, and I disliked it more after watching it a second time. And I think Jordan Peele is fantastically talented, and he's got a brain that needs to create things. And he does come up with some really fantastic images and connections. But I don't feel like this movie was like done all the way. And I also feel like out of the three, it cohered the least. But next time he makes a movie, I will be there. I will watch it. And I'm glad that I had the opportunity to see this movie. I'm just not bananas over it, because I feel like there are just too many underdone pieces of it, in terms of characterization and in terms of connecting the themes.
Yeah.
So I was disappointed in that. But all in all, it was a great year, and it's been a great experience talking to y'all. Thank you, Wohos, for joining us on this bonus episode. It means the world of horror to us truly. We want to wish you a new year of health and wealth, however you measure that, and lots of fulfilling film and TV watching experiences. Please check out our Fave 5 watches from some of our friends from Film vs. Film, Drag Mitch to Hell, Scare You, and Comfort Films from episode 94. If you would like to watch along with us next time, Mac and I will be looking at films about the apocalypse with The Day After and Threads. On behalf of Mac and Quinn, I'm Mom. Remember, we love you, and don't go into the basement.